Welcome back to the Shakeout Podcast. Before we get into today's conversation about marathon prep, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Altitude Sports. At Altitude Sports, they know that the right gear can make all the difference on race day. Whether you're lining up for your first marathon like Charles Philibert Thibodeau in New York, or just trying to stay comfortable through your long runs this fall, Altitude Sports has everything you need to get out there. From shoes by New Balance, Hoka, Saucony, On, Salomon, Asics, Brooks, Ultra, Normal, and Adidas, to gear and apparel from District Vision, Satisfy, The North Face, Koros, Garmin, Ciel, and more, they've got you covered head to toe. They're a proudly Canadian company based in Montreal, and they make it simple to get what you need fast. Next day delivery anywhere in Canada, even the same day if you're in Montreal. And if it doesn't fit, it's super easy to return it. You don't even need to have a printer. Just scan the QR code they send you. Head to altitudesports.com and use promo code SHAKEOUT to get up to 20% off your first order. Conditions apply. You'll find all the details and the link in the episode description.
If there's something in life that you're pretty passionate about and that you want to be good at, I really think that you should pour your heart into it and give your best, give your absolute best. And you can't be mad at yourself and you can't be disappointed if you give absolutely everything. And I just feel like after I crossed the line in New York with regards to professional running and elite racing, I will have given absolutely everything. And hopefully people can remember just being absolutely dedicated to what I believe was the thing I could be the best at.
For more than a decade, few athletes have been as ubiquitous in Canadian athletics as Charles Philibert Thibodeau. From a legendary university career at Université Laval that saw him help turn the Rouge et Or into the powerhouse they remain today, Charles quickly rose through the ranks on the elite scene, chalking up podium performances, national records, and championship titles on the roads, track, and cross-country course while becoming a mainstay of Canadian national teams from Brazil to Budapest, Santiago to Tokyo. While his approachability has made him a favorite of both fans and competitors alike for years, it has been his remarkable versatility as an athlete across a variety of different surfaces and distances that has made his staying power in the sport so unique. And while Charles has made himself equally at home in a Diamond League 1500 as he is on a muddy cross-country course, there's still one event that remains as the final line item on a career bucket list that seems to stretch on forever: the mighty marathon. Now, the wait is finally over, and the man they call CPT will take to the streets of NYC to tackle the TCS New York City Marathon, hoping to put an exclamation point on the final chapter of a career that will go down as one of the greats in Canadian distance running history. This week on the show, we welcome Charles back in the lead up to New York, looking back at the moments that have defined his career thus far, as well as hearing why the long road of his professional career must go through 42.2 more kilometers down the streets of the Big Apple. Charles, welcome back to the Shakeout Podcast.
Thanks for having me, John. You always have a way of showering your guests with flowers. I feel privileged. That's a pretty sweet intro.
I feel like it's been a full decade in the making. When I think back, I mean, you've been a huge part of my own running career. We go back all the way to 2016 when what was supposed to be crashing on my couch in my college dorm room for a month turned into a 6-month training camp. And it's been a lot of memories since then. So super excited to have you on. And gosh, we've had you on before to talk about track, to talk about Université Laval, but this is an exciting one. We get to talk marathoning. Charles Philibert Thibodeau, the marathoner to be. It's the week of the TCS New York City Marathon. You're making your debut at 34 years old. Would the Charles of a decade ago have believed that you'd be towing the line in a pro marathon field? Did you ever see this coming for yourself?
Maybe. I think there's a version of me in the past that would have envisioned this, and for the one and only reason that I feel like throughout my career I've been pretty good at trying to execute plans that are a little ballsy, probably out of my league, and just, you know, sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't, but I never really shy away from a challenge. And I think me being part of the sport for so long is I felt like I could challenge myself all the way until, you know, last year at the Olympics and this year on the track. And if I were to finish it up in with fireworks or make it, a bit dramatic. I felt like I needed a good challenge. So I guess the marathon is where it's at now. It's probably that's the only thing I haven't done really.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely on brand for you to want to go out with some fireworks. And I think a marathon in and of itself would have definitely accomplished that. But not only are you choosing to do a marathon, you're choosing to do one just around 2 months after running at the World Championships on the track. I mean, it wasn't that many weeks ago that you were lining up against the best milers in the world in the 1500 meter at Tokyo. Why did now feel like the right time to take on the marathon, and why New York specifically?
Like I said, I'm good at not having the greatest plans, the more ballsy ones, and we'll see if it blows up in my face once race time. But no, I think even if running New York meant that I had less preparation than doing Valencia or Phoenix or even Houston in January, I kind of feel like mentally and physically, I'm at a place where every week that I add of training to my career feels it feels tough, and I've been able to hang on to this marathon training block just because I was very I was very motivated with the idea of trying to run a marathon as well as I could. But I'm very, very much ready for retirement. Like I just think I need to give my body and my mind a break. So that's why, New York, that's a little bit earlier than the most the other marathons that would have fit better. So I didn't really mind it. And then also I think having participated in the Fifth Avenue Mile and the Millrose Games a bunch of times, New York Road Runners and this whole organization is extremely professional. They do things well. And I knew that if they were to accept me in the elite field in the marathon, it was going to be the experience of a lifetime. So that definitely had some weight to the decision.
New York has been a city that you have a long history with, on the track with the Millrose Games, also, of course, on the roads running down Fifth Ave in that mile. You're adding 25.2 extra miles to what you typically head to New York for in the fall, but all the more reason to get excited. 25 times the excitement, maybe. With such a short turnaround from the World Championships, which again, less than 2 months ago in Tokyo, what's the transition been like? Going from running max speed work, spiking up on the track, to trying to get in these long, grinding marathon sessions.
To be honest, the first 2 weeks, it was kind of hard to get accustomed to running so much, both just overall volume and in training. But I think that thankfully, we had a strength approach to training in the last few years, and I've been running a lot of miles regardless, even if it wasn't specific to the marathon. So I do think that this volume accumulated in the last few years carried pretty well. And yeah, it's been surprising how the body adapted quickly to the longer distances, to the extent that there's good money to be made in the marathon, and then I train for like 2 or 3 weeks and my body responds fairly well to like the longer distances, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should have done this earlier. Maybe I should have given it a shot earlier. But that block probably had 4 weeks of like really intense marathon training, which is, it's really, really, really not ideal. But I think by those standards, it went pretty well. And it's funny because when you start training for the marathon, you just go out and you run. And it's the mindset you got to have. When you're on the track, you're used to counting down the laps and you're always counting down the moment where you're going to finish and kick. And heading out for those 40K runs, it's just you head out the door and it's like, today I'm running indefinitely. I have a plan. Like I gotta respect some paces and hit these times throughout a run, but that run could be all day. Like that was the mindset that I had, and it's really interesting how you have to like switch your mindset to be able to zone out and run for over, 2 hours comfortably.
Have the realities of marathon training been different at all from what you expected it to be like? Obviously, you hear marathon training, you expect long, grinding long runs, but how has it been when you're actually out there for those indefinitely long, long runs? Have you found it difficult to stay focused, stay motivated, or is it coming pretty naturally?
It's definitely a mental grind, because sometimes you're in those runs and you just don't feel good. Like you're, when you're in the middle of the block and your legs are tired, you're out for 40K, and by kilometer number 12 or 13 or 14, your legs are already hurting pretty bad. And you know that from there, you're only supposed to like speed up. And like, that's daunting. And it's a fight with the mind. And interestingly, it's a fight with the body. But the way I've experienced it, at least, is the first few workouts that I did, I just really didn't pay attention to nutrition. And then, I asked my coach, okay, we got to be more serious about this. Like, what am I supposed to consume during the marathon? And we basically figured out that it was like one gel before the race and one every 5K, more or less. And then started trying to practice that during the runs. And, you know, instead of like hurting and then bonking and having to fight for my life, when you fuel well, you're just hurting, but you don't bonk. So that was a very interesting realization that I had. It's just like, oh, wow. Like, I basically just have to like eat a lot of gels, like a lot of those Morton gels, and, you know, my legs hurt, but I can keep going. And I guess that's what we started practicing after a little bit. And to some extent, I want to say it went pretty well, because I adapted pretty well to like sustaining decently fast paces under a lot of like muscular pain. I've been able to fuel well. So, at this point, I'm not sure in the 6 weeks that I had between Worlds and New York, what else I was supposed to do.
Nailing that nutrition piece is something that I think a lot of marathoners have struggled with. It's funny you mentioned that you've cracked the code on fueling so that you can essentially just suffer for longer. You're getting enough food in so that you can just keep on hurting for longer. And I think a lot of our listeners, myself included, think like, oh, wow, that sounds like he's just found a way to make himself hurt even more. But it is an incredibly crucial part of getting ready for the marathon, is just learning to endure that suffering. Do you think in some ways that going from those shorter, more intense distances, like the 1500, where it's not long, but the pain is so intense for such a short amount of time, has that translated well into preparing for the longer types of suffering that you're experiencing in these long runs and in prepping for a marathon, or is it completely different?
I think it's completely different. And to be very honest with you, like, the reason why I think the transition has gone well is just because I'm kind of crazy, and I get motivated with new challenges. And I don't think 98% of the milers would be able to handle such a transition. Like, mentally, you have to be really dialed in, and you have to really change your way of the way you focus during the runs, the way you manage your inner thoughts during a run. And the hurt is so different. I think I was just able to do the transition because I was like, okay, well, I got 6 weeks. I just got to do it. I got to find a way to make it work. And so it happens. But I don't think anyone that has a 1500 meter background that's not genuinely interested in running a good marathon is going to do really well.
Us longer distance guys often joke that people just, they race up until the distance at which their talent runs out. And so every guy who wishes he was a 400 runner but isn't quite quick enough chooses the 800. Every guy who wishes he was an 800 runner but isn't quite quick enough chooses the mile. And I think most milers, once they found that event, it's like, it's sexy, it's under 4 minutes, there's no reason to go any longer. And the idea of cranking out 180 kilometer weeks like you've been doing the last month and a bit getting ready for this is just so far beyond the realm of anything they'd ever dream of doing, because they have nothing to prove. And yet, like you mentioned, you're always looking for that new challenge. And despite what you've accomplished on the track, you've always wanted to compete on different surfaces at different distances. I mean, even earlier this year, you set a new Canadian 10K road record before going on to a full track season, focusing on the 1500. How do you think that versatility has helped in terms of keeping you in the sport for so long? Do you think that that's been one of your strengths, is keeping things novel and always looking for that different challenge year to year and even within a year?
Yeah, it definitely helped in the sense that I think it made running more enjoyable. And, you know, it makes you go through the motions of seasons with always some short-term goals, which makes things interesting. And I know that my coach, Felix Antoine, his philosophy is very much that if you're aiming to be a good 1500 meter runner, it means you got to be, like, if you want to be world-class there, you got to be world-class at the 800 and world-class at the 5K, you know, like you got to be very complete. And so with his approach, it just kind of made sense to compete on all sorts of distances and all sorts of surfaces. But that said, looking back at my career, I do feel like sometimes we tried to chew more than like we could really sustain. So I think there are definitely some, maybe like some cross-country races or some indoor races that we should have scratched in to make the year more consolidated and be more ready for the summer. But like at the end of the day, it was just fun to be able to compete over everything and everything. So I don't really regret it.
Yeah, it's been a defining part of your career, is competing over everything, every distance, every national team that there was to make. You've made it. Every record there was to chase, you've chased it. And the marathon is kind of that last thing that's looming up in front of you now, and you're just days away from finally adding that. Are there any nerves that are starting to creep in as you're now into race week and realizing, oh man, it's only a couple of days until I actually am towing the line in New York?
Yeah, I want to say it's been a very long time since I've been this scared for a race. I don't think I've actually been this scared for a race ever in my life. I think, you know, even if I go out at what, like a medium risky pace, like not a risky pace, but not also, you know, like too slow, like even if it's just medium or like what we consider medium effort, medium risk effort, I just think that like so many things can happen during a marathon. And obviously a lot of, like, all we hear about is people saying, you gotta respect the distance, you gotta respect the distance. And what, like, that's the number one thing I haven't done. Like, I haven't respected the distance. I trained for 4 weeks and I'm just going out there hoping to run like a good time. Like, it's the number one rule. I'm not doing it. So I'm incredibly scared. And the other day I came across a video of just a flyover of the course in like 4 minutes, seeing like where it goes, like through all the streets and like the bridges and all that stuff. And like, you can really see the incline and the hills you have to go through. And then I was just looking at it and I started sweating. I'm genuinely scared. And probably last time I think something felt like that was looking at, you know, like footage of the Olympics if I look at footage of the Olympics last summer where, you know, I'm running in front of 80,000 people, I look at that, I'm like, that was so scary. Like, that was insanely scary. And I think the marathon is even scarier, to be honest.
Yeah, 80,000 people, and 50,000 of those people are out on the course breathing down your neck behind you. New York is unlike anything else in terms of the crowd support, five deep on either side of the course of screaming fans, everyone trying to outdo one another as you make your way through those five boroughs. You talk about the track, and you talk about those Olympic Games in Paris last year, 8 years after your first Olympic Games in Rio. And there were ups and downs in the middle there. You've had more than your fair share of injury struggles, and yet you kept at it. You made your way back to the Olympic semifinal level, just like you'd done in Rio in 2016. And coming off of what was a phenomenal year last year, you ran 3:33, narrowly missed out on the Olympic final. You made the decision to make this your last year of competing on the track. Was that decision one that you've been thinking about for a long time? Is it one that came up fairly organically in recent months? Or has it always been the plan to finish this portion of your career, the track portion of your career, in 2025?
I think it was fairly set in stone, even like pretty early in my career, knowing, you know, when I switched to pro running in 2015, and I was getting ready for Rio, and I was just looking at things, you know, like it would make sense for me to take a good shot at three Olympic cycles, including 2016. So that would put me 2024, 33 years old. And then, you know, like, obviously it wasn't in the position where I was making six figures every year, or like a killing out of running. So it also meant that after 2024, another year of competing, like another, which makes sense because you get another world championships and a year where you explore what you want to do, other in life, like for your next step, for what I wanted to do for my career after. And I've, even 10 years ago, I didn't know about if physically I was going to be, you know, done by then, or if I like, even if I would feel like I could keep going. I do think I'm at an age and I've had the experiences where it's time for me to just move on. And I think that life has a lot more to offer than just competing, even though these will be crazy memories and like a big part of my life. I do think life has a lot of other things. And for me to be able to move through life, it was important for me to seek out an exit after Paris. So like for me, 2025 was always going to be that exit year. And I was going to be on the lookout for what my career and my life would take me beyond those years.
Getting to write your own script on the way that you leave this sport as a competitive athlete is something that I think a lot of people don't fully appreciate just how difficult that is to do. I think back to those difficult years that you had in your career around the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, when you would get injured and then you were coming so close to getting back to the Charles that we knew you were capable of being, only to have kind of freak accidents take you down again. And I think a lot of people would have hung them up at that point and said, you know what, like, I've had more than my fair share of bad luck. It's time to look beyond. But you kept going, and you fast forward to now, and you get to leave the professional side of the sport on your terms, with a race of your choosing. There's something special about going into a race, I would imagine, knowing that it's going to be your last as an elite athlete. I think so many athletes don't get that chance because of injury or because of other life circumstances. Talk a little bit about the support network that's been around you, that's allowed you to stay in the sport this long and to really write your own script, especially in these past couple of years where you've had this resurgence after coming through the wilderness of injuries and a lot of setbacks.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously working with Felix Antoine since 2010, and like Felix also being only a few years older than I am, we kind of grew together in the sport. So that in itself was a special relationship, a very much of a two-way coach-athlete relationship and mentorship, I even want to say, from him. I think having someone like that support you through all the stages of your life, whether it is, you know, like the highs and, you know, these great moments that we've had together because of his coaching and his savviness and this preparation, but also being able to be there and support me, and also being able to reflect and say as a coach, like, what should we do differently and how do we bring him back to the level that he was, and even how do we make him even a better athlete. I think Felix and I had a very special relationship, and obviously he's going to be there in New York, so that's going to be really nice to have my last race with him around. And obviously the other big piece is Mary Lou Lamy, my physiotherapist. And I know a few athletes on the Canadian national team swear by her. And I think I showed up to our office in January of 2016 with chronic lower back pain. And I couldn't run. I couldn't walk without pain. And I was like, I have to run under 3:36. In June, like, this is what we need to do. And she really bought into my talent, and she really believed that I could become one of the best runners in the world. And she, you know, the way like Olympic athletes give themselves to their sport and are really dedicated day in, day out to their sport, well, as a therapist, she's that. She's the manifestation of the Olympic spirit, but as a therapist, and all the efforts she's put in personally to make me a better athlete, I mean, it paid off. And after 2021, I decided to move to Vancouver kind of for good, or at least spend most of my years there. And that's really when things took off and when I could really work with her, like once or twice a week, very consistently. And we were able to achieve great things working together. And obviously there are other people in the support system, like Chris McCash, who my agent, he's pulled off some legendary tricks to make me race in some places. I have some good stories with him. And you know, it's funny, like being in the sport for 15 years, I've encountered probably like 5 or 6 different generations of athletes. You know, in a collegiate team, every generation of athlete kind of changes every 2 or 3 years. And it's like I've grown and I've been able to mentor like a lot of different generations, and all these teammates, they've played a part in making the sport fun. So thanks to all of them, it was easy to, you know, keep going and really just enjoy what I was doing.
It is interesting that you mention those multiple generations, because you have been this transcendental figure. Certainly over the course of my career in the sport, I went from looking up to you as this guy who is a total stud on the collegiate scene a couple years ahead of me while you were at Université Laval. And then I had the privilege of getting to be teammates with you and training partners with you through the years. And to just see that you've had that impact on so many athletes over such a long time, and that there were so many that came before you. You got to be teammates with legends like Nate Brennan, and you really have been this connective tissue that's connected the old guard of Canadian legends in the sport with some of the new up-and-coming athletes coming through the system. And again, there's nothing that you haven't seen, haven't done, haven't tried in the sport for those young athletes coming up now, especially the ones who, like you, made the decision to stay in Canada and continue working with Canadian-based coaches. What type of advice do you have for them if they have the same type of aspirations to take on the world the way that you have in the sport?
I think what defined, I want to say, most of my university years and maybe like the 2 or 3 years after was just that along with my teammates, we really had a work hard, play hard type situation with the way we did things. And we would train extremely hard. And, you know, like our main goal was to get better every day, every week. But it didn't mean we didn't have fun. Like we would have fun daily at the track, but also on the weekends after the races, it happened. We would go out and like be collegiate athletes, you know, like or at least be university kids before being collegiate athletes. You know what I mean? Like, I think having a blend of fun, but also just working relentlessly hard, really made running very fun. And it made it easy for me to just latch onto it and really want to get better. So I think eventually, you know, like once you start to get to a level, you got to be more professional and you got to surround yourself with a good support team, and you got to make things right. But at the very core, just like having a lot of fun and striving for being better every day and every week, it's just what matters.
You talk about having fun in the sport, and I'd love to just, from your perspective, hear what some of those highlight mountaintop moments are, because it's been a long career. And as a fan, there's so much to pick from when I think of what you've accomplished. But what stands out to you, Charles, when you think back on this 15 years in the sport as some of the most fun that you've had?
There's a few. I'll try to not get lost in the stories with them. I'll just name them. But third year university, coming in second as a team at U Sports Championships in cross country. I think that has to be one of the best memories ever, like all things considered. I think collegiate cross country is so hard to beat because of you know, like the just the pain, this the blood, sweat, and tears that you share with your teammates every day in training, and then like the emotions that come on the day of nationals. Yeah, in that year, everybody disregarded us. We knew we could podium, but everybody was just like, nah, that's not going to do it. And nobody thought we could do it. And then we came in second. That was, yeah, that would definitely way up there, way, way, way up there. I think after that, we'd have to go to 2015, running 334 for the first time in Monaco. For those who don't know, I bought a flight on my dime to go to Nice in France, right close to Monaco. And I was told that if I showed up, I could possibly get a lane. And I think the meet director called bluff, but I showed up and he decided that it was a ballsy move and he put me in the race. And, you know, all of a sudden, I was in the same race as Nick Willis, Matthew Centrowitz, Mo Farah, McLoofy, Marangoig, Asbjørn Kipra, like all these guys. And it's just like, it was one of those moments where you go, oh, these are not my idols anymore. Like I'm racing them. And really had to step up that very moment and went from 338 to 334 in one race. And in 2015, 334 was, it's probably what a 332 is today, you know, or 331 even. But it, like, I think walking out of the stadium, I was just crying tears of joy. And like, I called my mom, my dad, my coach, Mary Lou. And it was just one of those moments where I knew my life changed at that very moment. Like at that very moment, I knew I was going to be a professional runner and that I was going to be able to go to the Olympics, like all in one. So it was like a very strong moment. After that, I'd say 2016, before the semifinal at the Olympics, just being outside the stadium in the practice track, hearing the roar of the crowd in the stadium and having that moment with Felix where it's like, well, I guess we worked a lifetime for this, you know, because as a young coach and young athlete, it's like, this is our first experience. This is a very rich experience. And it's like, well, this is it now. Let's just go. You know, that was a very sweet and special moment between Felix and I, I'd say. And then after that, I think we'd have to go all the way to Pan Ams. Like Pan Ams in 2023, winning the 1500 in very dramatic fashion, just, you know, diving on the line, Rob coming in second. So like Canada 1-2, just a very rich and packed with emotions moment of like, dove to the ground. And when I was on the ground, I was just like catching my breath and laying on the track. And I was just telling myself, if I actually won this, I'm going to give them the show that they deserve, you know, like I was so pumped. I was so happy. And I think, finally having the national anthem play for me in that big stadium, that was, again, that's a moment that most athletes don't get the chance to have. And it really felt like a redemption moment for me after having so many struggles between 2017 to 2021, like hearing the national anthem, like having a thought about my coach, my physio, my family, and just being like, I did it, you know, that was a big, big moment. And then I think in terms of overall racing experience, nothing's going to beat Paris. Racing 3 days in a row, three rounds all within 3 days, and it felt like a groundhog day, but a groundhog day of the most intense day you're ever gonna have. By day three, I was just spent, you know, like I was on running on 4 hours of sleep, strictly adrenaline and Morton gels and bicarb and caffeine and name it, you know, like it was just running on pure fumes and adrenaline. And that was just an incredible racing experience, having the chance to race in that packed stadium three days in a row.
You talk about running on fumes, caffeine, and Morton gels. Sounds eerily similar to what we might be able to expect from you this Sunday. Early morning start, caffeinated to the gills, full of gels, and grinding it out on the streets of New York. Something that stands out to me when you recount all of those things is there's this element of risk-taking, diving for the line in a sit-and-kick race against Robert Heppenstall and Santiago at those Pan Am Games, flying your way to Nice with kind of a half-baked promise that if you show up, you might get a spot on the most coveted 1,500-meter starting line in the sport. Big risks have always been a huge part of your career, Charles. What type of risks are you planning to take and willing to take this weekend in New York?
I think one of the reasons why I said it's like earlier that it's so scary is just that training went well, but I also have absolutely no idea what that training is supposed to mean. You know, I don't know if, I mean, I know all out, I'm not going to run 220. So like, let's say, okay, I can run faster than 220, but like how close can I get to 210? And it's like, part of me thinks I could get pretty close, but you know, I'm also not respecting the distance because I've only really trained for 4 weeks. So it's really tough to gauge. And I think it just so happens that the Quebec record is 214. And I think Felix thinks, and I think that it is a medium risk to take to go at 214 pace. And I think I really have to run it like a scared 1500 guy that's running a cross country race. Like, if I have any chances of running well, I have to negative split. But that's the thing. I don't even know if 214 pace is something that I'm going to negative split at all. Like we're purely doing that because it's a Quebec record and we kind of feel like it's achievable, but I have no idea, man. Like I think there's like, I might get to 30K and completely blow up, but, or I might get to 30K and run a 30-minute 10K. Like I wish the latter is what happens, but like, honestly, I'm extremely scared and I just really don't know what to expect at this point.
I love that you say medium risk. Medium risk makes it sound a little bit less scary, especially for someone who's used to taking the high risk nuclear option whenever it's available. There are hopefully a couple of things that you do know for sure going into this. It sounds like you've already dialed in your nutrition. In terms of gear for race day, what's going to be on your feet? What are you reaching for, hopefully, to make your trip through New York a little bit easier?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the New Balance SC Elite. It's a great shoe. I mean, I ran the 10K record in Ottawa with those shoes back in May. And I remember first 3K just running right with Cam Levins. And we came through like 8:15 for 3K. And I was just like, is this downhill going to end? And it wasn't the downhill. It was just a shoe working for me. So I'm kind of hoping, you know, like New York is pretty hilly. So I'm hoping that they give me a bit of an edge on some of the hills. And like, you know, I think being formerly a 1500 guy, like muscularly going down hills. And if I have the right shoes for it, I think I can recover a decent amount, maybe in the first half of the race until it starts really hurting. Yeah, it's going to be those shoes and, you know, like shorts and singlet. And it's pretty simple. There's not much else going on.
Has there been an element, now that you know that you're done with the track and you've been focused on the roads, have you been enjoying the road training, or is there part of you that's missing that track? Are you missing spiking up? Are you maybe going to throw the spikes on one last time this week and rip some 200s or anything to get ready for this race just to prove to yourself you still got it? Or are you completely wiping the slate clean? Or are you a full road guy now?
No, full road guy. I think it didn't, like, with how compressed the buildup has been, you know, it didn't make sense to throw in some track work in there. I mean, if it were a 15-week buildup like most sane people do, then I think it makes sense to spike up every once in a while. But now we just had to really focus on very specific marathon training, I think, for me to get the best chance at surviving the race. And I want to say, though, that I've definitely felt like, even if I was really sharp 6 weeks ago, I've definitely felt that sharpness go away. And I don't know if it's just the heaviness of the legs with the volume, or just the fact that training is so geared towards running slow by like my standards. But I don't feel that I have as much pop in my legs as I did a few months back. And I do think that, you know, in terms of flow, feeling of flow, being able to spike up, and, you know, when you're in a good 1500 meter shape, you can go out on the track and smoothly run some 53s or 54s. Like, that was probably one of the best feelings I could experience. Like, I've experienced as a 1500 guy, just being like really fit and running those like fast quarters. And that's definitely gone. That's long gone. And, you know, like, on the verge of retirement, it's not about to come back, sadly.
You'll always have that memory to look back on, is knowing that at some point in your career, you were able to knock out back-to-back 53-second 400s off short rest and feel good doing it. I don't even have to look back that far. In my memory of watching you train, you were ripping some pretty sexy sessions just this past summer in Vancouver. So they're not that far removed. You talk about looking back and about remembering some of those highlights. We've already recounted some of the performance highlights. More generally speaking, when you cross the finish line in New York this weekend and put a bow on your professional running career, what do you hope that other people remember in the career of Charles Philibert Thibodeau?
Just that, like, I've given everything, you know, like, if there's something in life that you're pretty passionate about and that you want to be good at, I really think that you should pour your heart into it and give your best, give your absolute best. And you can't be mad at yourself, and you can't be disappointed if you give absolutely everything. And I just feel like, after I crossed the line in New York with regards to professional running and elite racing, I will have given absolutely everything. And that's probably like one of the things I'll be the most proud of, and hopefully that people can remember, just being absolutely dedicated to what I believe was the thing I could be the best at. And that just goes outside of the obvious of, you know, all the people that you meet, all the friends you make, the teammates, and this network of people you meet around the world when you travel so much like I did. Like, obviously, these are all things that in my running career, I hope, like, I will remember, but I hope people remember me as like a good person, or like a good runner, or a good competitor throughout all those experiences. But like, on the more personal level, like, I just feel like I've given absolutely everything to running. And that's something I can be proud of as I walk away, hopefully after crossing the line. Like, it's not done yet, you know, like, something could happen. I don't want to jinx myself. But the moment I finish the race, hopefully I can feel proud of, like, just pouring my heart into the sport.
Run, walk, or crawl across the line, I know for a fact that we will all be very proud of the career that you've written for yourself, one way or another. Charles, we wish you all the best of luck this weekend in New York. And more than that, all the best of luck with the chapter that comes after this, the one that's yet to be written. You've written a pretty remarkable one as a professional athlete. Canada's been so lucky to have you repping the red and white for so many years, and we know that you're going to do great things repping us all in the future as well. While this might be your last professional race, something tells me that your time in the running community is anything but over. Thanks so much, and best of luck in New York this weekend.
Thanks for having me, John. It's always a pleasure to chat.
Huge thanks again to Charles for joining us on this week's episode. Make sure to check him out on Instagram at CharlesPT as he takes on the New York City Marathon this Sunday, November 2nd, against a stacked elite field. Canadian Running will be live and in person from the Big Apple, bringing you all the highlights from the world's biggest marathon. So don't forget to check out runningmagazine.ca and Canadian Running on social media so you don't miss a thing. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Shakeout Podcast. We've got plenty more great episodes coming your way, so be sure to hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for this week's episode. I'm your host, John Gay, saying thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you again soon for your next Shakeout.